Hello, Thrive Nation. Welcome to the Made to Thrive show. And on this episode...
And you can just count the number in PubMed. And that number is also going up dramatically, exactly in step with the rise, or a bit delayed, but in step with the rise in glyphosate usage. People are becoming aware the gut's a problem because glyphosate is destroying the gut bacteria. And the gut bacteria are so incredibly important. We didn't realize how important they were for our well-being until they got broken. And that's what we're seeing now. People are well aware the gut microbiome is in trouble, but they don't know why. And I think glyphosate is a major player.
Hello, Thrive Nation. Steve Stavs, Africa's number one pro biohacker at your service. I'm here to inspire and empower you to beat fatigue, wake up with boundless energy, while avoiding disease into your ripe old age. This show was so emotional. When I heard the stats on children developing autism in the USA, absolutely crazy. Big corporates are sacrificing the health of people for the price of profit. Heard of Roundup, Monsanto, or Bayer? Well, this episode is with a true health advocate who is not afraid to speak the truth about this agricultural weed killer that has intoxicated our water, air, and food. And let me inform you that glyphosate is being freely used in South Africa and Africa. There are no regulations on this. It's everywhere. Dr. Stephanie Seneff is a pioneer in the field of glyphosate and adverse effects it has on our health. Stephanie has an MIT master's degree and an undergrad in biology. In 2007, her concern for autism and the environmental factors behind its alarming increase, which she describes as a quiet epidemic, saw her research move in a new direction and begin focusing on the gut. Agrochemical companies claim that glyphosate is safe for humans, animals, and the environment, but emerging scientific research on glyphosate's deadly disruption of the gut microbiome, its crippling effect on protein synthesis, and its impact on the body's ability to use and transport sulfur, not to mention several landmark legal cases, tells a very different story. We unpack some fascinating dark agricultural secrets. Our exposure to GMO chemicals and their dangers, glyphosate, the most popular antibiotic on the market, dramatic increase in autism rates from the 1950s, the impact of the current vaccine schedule on our children, the court cases and class action lawsuits against Monsanto and Bayer, the rise in certified organic foods and farm to table in response to poor food quality, eating organic, apple cider vinegar, fermented foods, and sunlight exposure as proactive tools, Dr. Seneff's concern on the current vaccine. This episode is once again sponsored by F45. This is my go-to functional training class, which is a mix of circuit and high-intensity interval training style workouts geared to everyday movements. I'm there at least twice a week giving my all, which has helped me strengthen my overall body and ensured that I sustain my anaerobic fitness. F45 Bryanston is offering the Made to Thrive community a free week's training. There could be 6 classes for free. Drop me a mail at connect@madetothrive.co.za and I'll send you the details. Join the community by subscribing to our newsletter by going to our website madetothrive.co.za and find us on Facebook at Steve Stavs ZA and Made to Thrive ZA, as well as on Instagram at Steve Stavs ZA, on LinkedIn at Steve Stavs. Please send me your questions, feedback, and any areas of health that you would like me to cover. I do need your help. If you're on Apple, please rate and review. And on Android, please download and share. Thank you so much. Delight in your purpose and be surrounded. Hello, Thrive Nation. We've got a very special guest all the way sitting in Hawaii, and it's just been a privilege and an honor just to watch her career and, you know, just celebrate who she is, because she's standing up as a pioneer in the field of glyphosate and what glyphosate is doing to people's health and to their children. And so I've learned about her from Dr. Mercola, who's had her on his podcast, and I've watched many YouTube clips. And so welcome to the show, Dr. Stephanie Seneff.
So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. So I do want to dive in. You're a MIT research scientist. Give us a little bit about your background, where you studied, what you did, and what makes you a real expert on glyphosate and also looking at GMOs. I know you've done a lot of work on GMOs, glyphosate, sulfur, and then lastly statins, but maybe you can just give us a quick background on your education.
Okay, well, it is quite interesting. My undergraduate degree is from MIT in biology. And then I have a master's, EE, and PhD degrees all in electrical engineering and computer science, so kind of an eclectic background. I worked in computer science for most of my career, developing spoken dialogue systems that allow computers to interact with humans using natural speech, precursors to Siri and Amazon Echo. That field has been phenomenally successful, and so I was able to move on because once it became commoditized, researchers can't really keep up with the massive amounts of money that are spent by the industry developing the technology. So it was time to sort of move away from that. And very appropriately at that time, this was about maybe 2007, 2008 timeframe, I was getting really worried about autism. I was seeing the rates going up dramatically, and I was seeing that most of the money was directed towards genetics, and I knew there had to be environmental factors, and I wanted to find them. I really wanted to find those environmental factors that are causing the epidemic that we're experiencing in this country in autism, which I think is really frightening and is going to really cause tremendous stress on the economic system, not to mention the pain of all the parents who have to deal with these children that are just in constant, some of them are in constant pain, and they can't communicate. I mean, it's just really horrendous what's happening. And it's a quiet epidemic in the sense that the government doesn't seem to even notice that it's happening. So I'm very frustrated about all of that. I started looking in 2007. I looked at the vaccines first, and I do think the vaccines are a causative factor in autism. And then I was looking at other things as well, the plastics, the lead, you know, and looking for something that was going up in step with autism. And about 5 years later, after 5 years of looking and reading a whole lot about autism, so I understood really complicated condition with many comorbidities. And I, so maybe around 2012 timeframe, I was frustrated because I knew there was something going on with the gut, you know, definitely connection to gut dysbiosis. And I couldn't figure out, I thought maybe too many antibiotics because of ear infections, maybe they just had some kind of defective immune system. I was groping. And Professor Don Huber is a retired professor from Purdue University, an expert in plant pathology and plant physiology. And he was giving a talk at this conference. I happened to be giving a talk on statin drugs at the same conference. And I thought, this looks interesting. Glyphosate, what is that? I really didn't know what glyphosate was at that point. And I went in and I said, I've got to listen to this talk. And I was on the edge of my seat because everything he was saying that glyphosate causes were things I knew were happening in autism. It fit like a hand in the glove. And I was just like, wow, this is it. And, you know, I knew about Roundup, and I didn't realize the extensiveness to which we're exposed to Roundup. And I'll tell you, in South Africa, it's not good either, but here we're worse than you. And South Africa is probably the most exposed population in Africa, because you guys are in deep. You probably know that with Monsanto and GMO corn. I mean, you use a lot of chemicals in agriculture in South Africa, especially glyphosate. So, but anyway, the U.S. is the leader. I mean, we use more glyphosate per person than any other country in the world. Mm. Glyphosate is the most used herbicide on the planet. It kills all weeds, it kills all plants, actually, except for those that have been engineered to resist it through this GMO technology. And herbicide in the world, and it's used substantially more than the next most, which I think is atrazine. In other words, glyphosate is considered to be safe, and therefore people are attracted to it. It's a preferred alternative over the others because all the other herbicides are known to be really toxic. Somehow glyphosate got off the hook, and we got convinced that it's safe, and therefore we love it. And of course, it does greatly reduce the cost of producing foods, because especially with the GMOs, you can just spray the glyphosate all over the crop. It won't die. All the weeds die. So it's really, you know, it's a boon for agriculture. But we don't mind that we're poisoning our population. This is what's happening. We're eating it in our food. Mm.
Yeah, and I think what really blew me away when I was listening to you and looking at a lot of your work, and I've been on your website, which is incredible. I've downloaded some PowerPoint presentations, and you make that so freely available. So once again, thank you so much. And I know you're standing with this banner that I think is a real toxin. But since the 1950s, the autism rates in America have increased so dramatically. Can you just let the sort of audience know that what the rates in live births were, or, you know, autistic children in the 50s compared to what they are now?
Yeah, I mean, in the 50s, it was probably one in 10,000 kids that got autism, a very, very rare condition. And by today, it's one in 54. One in 54, because that's the number that the CDC is quoting. I think it's worse than that. And that actually is 12-year-olds. That number is computed on 12-year-olds. So since it's going up, you know, one-year-olds are going to have a much higher risk of developing autism than one in 54. And my projections, I did some projections a while back, and I showed that if it keeps on going up at the rate at which it's going up, if you just extend the curve, turns out it's exponential growth in autism over the past two decades. And if you extend that exponential out into the future, you find that kids born in 2032, which is really right around the corner, half of them will get diagnosed with autism. And that will be 80% of the boys and 20% of the girls. It's completely unsustainable. It's going to basically destroy the country, I think, if we just let it happen. So this is why I'm so urgently, you know, concerned about this. And the thing is, it's not just autism. Once I realized glyphosate's mechanism of toxicity, and of course, you're seeing obesity rates go up and diabetes, you know, and all kinds of gut problems, gut dysbiosis, you know, inflammatory gut, bloating and diarrhea. I mean, all these problems that people are having with their gut. All of a sudden, the gut has become a focus of research. If you just look at the papers that have been published concerning the gut microbiome, and you can just count the number in PubMed, and that number is also going up dramatically, exactly in step with the rise, or a bit delayed, but in step with the rise in glyphosate usage. People are becoming aware the gut's a problem because glyphosate's destroying the gut bacteria. And the gut bacteria are so incredibly important. We didn't realize how important they were for our well-being until they got broken. And that's what we're seeing now. People are well aware the gut microbiome is in trouble, but they don't know why. And I think glyphosate is a major player. I suspect by far the most important reason why we have this epidemic in gut problems. And it's just because glyphosate is so pervasive. It's used carelessly. People can just go buy it and use it to kill the dandelions on their yard while their kids are playing. They won't even know they're doing something bad because they're so assured that this is a wonderful herbicide, perfectly safe. They don't use any kind of protective equipment, you know. So people are getting poisoned by the Roundup they're buying to kill their dandelions. But I think more importantly, everybody's getting poisoned by the Roundup in their food. And people are finding high levels of glyphosate in really popular foods with children, like oatmeal and Oreo cookies and Goldfish crackers. All these popular snacks that the kids are eating are loaded up on glyphosate. And when people get gluten intolerance, which they get because of glyphosate, we have an epidemic in that, they stop eating gluten. And then they switch over to eating things like legumes. You know, so they eat a lot of chickpeas and garbanzo beans and lentils. Those are all absolutely loaded with glyphosate, not because they're GMO. They're not GMO, but they're sprayed right before harvest. And the highest levels of glyphosate, Canada tested a whole bunch of foods for glyphosate, and the highest levels consistently were found in these legumes. So people start eating more of those when they can't eat wheat, you know, then they just go into a downward spiral because they're still being poisoned probably even more. The wheat is sprayed right before harvest as well. That's why we have an epidemic in gluten intolerance, I believe, because the glyphosate is messing up the body's ability to digest the wheat. And that directly hits on the microbiome because it's a lactobacillus species, which is so crucial for the infant's gut. Lactobacillus, it is very much more sensitive to glyphosate than the other species in the gut. It really stands out. So it's getting killed by the glyphosate. And lactobacillus has a number of different enzymes that are specialized in breaking apart proline. And wheat has a lot of proline in it. And proline is difficult. It's difficult from the other amino acids. And the lactobacillus provides the tools to do that to the host. But it gets killed so the wheat doesn't get digested. And then you get the leaky gut, and then the undigested protein gets circulating in the circulatory system, and the immune cells then react to it and produce antibodies. And then those antibodies attack the body because there are other proteins that we produce that resemble wheat, the wheat proteins. And that's how you get this autoimmune result.
Wow. I just want to stop you there. I mean, if we've got, you know, statistics in America saying one in 54 children are born with autism, and that is an exponential.
Or get diagnosed with it. Have it by the age of 12, I should say, okay. Specifically with the CDC. Have it by the age of 12, because people don't necessarily know your child has autism until they get a little older. But I'm saying one in two born will develop autism in 2032, if we keep up the same rate, if we grow at the same rate as we have been, it'll be one in two in 2032.
But why is there not major news, and why aren't people investigating this, and why is this not sort of a, you know, we talk about the C19 pandemic, but I mean, this is a greater concern. If you're saying one in two by 2032, you know, that's literally like, you know, 11 years. You know, why isn't that an alarm siren to say, hang on, we've got to stop this. We've got to prevent this. What is causing this?
Yeah, I wish I knew why. This is what I keep asking. Why doesn't the government notice this? You know, we're just quietly letting it happen. They're not even really devoting money to figuring out what's going on. I mean, they just, most of the money goes towards genetics. And certainly there are genetic sensitivities. I mean, some of the kids that are getting it first are the ones who have certain proteins that are defective that are also being attacked by glyphosate. And so you get a double hit that way. If your protein's already defective, then you're going to get hit faster and be more likely to develop autism than someone who doesn't have that weak protein. That's what's happening. The kids that have certain proteins that have certain genetic mutations are inclined to get it first, but that doesn't mean that the genetics is not what's causing the epidemic. The epidemic is caused by the environmental factors. And I think the vaccines are another thing to worry about, because the vaccines have just gone through the roof. I mean, when I was a child, I had practically no vaccines, and my kids even got by with many fewer vaccines than what the kids are being subjected to today. And I'm very, very upset about the vaccine situation as well, almost equally with glyphosate, especially the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines, which I consider to be a giant, very risky experiment on the entire world population.
Wow, sure. It sounds overwhelming, Dr. Seneff. I mean, if you look at it now with all this glyphosate, I mean, you can buy Roundup on the shelf so easily at a hardware store here. It's freely available. They use it freely available everywhere. I mean, it just sounds like, how do we stand up against this? And I know I want to sort of dive a little bit deep into the legal sort of cases and the lawsuits that have been sort of won in America. And where's the development there? What's happening there? I know Monsanto and our buyers bought a Monsanto. And where does that stand? Has that not stopped sort of the progression and the use of glyphosate in crops and agriculture?
I think that it's helped a lot to move towards the place where we need to be, which is to ban glyphosate worldwide. I will not be content until it's banned worldwide. The United States is probably going to be the very last country to ban it, because we depend on it so much and we believe in it so much. And we have so much lobbying from the industry to keep the government from doing anything. It's very, very frustrating. But the lawsuits were fantastic. And I can remember that the moment when we heard that he had won, that Dwayne Johnson had won this amazing amount of money against Monsanto for his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was a very clean case, because glyphosate was the only chemical he was using in his job. And ironically, he was using it on schoolyards. So he was spraying glyphosate to control the weeds in the schoolyards. And that's just, to me, already shocking. You know, wow. You think about the kids in the playground with the glyphosate being used. And he had issues with his equipment, and he got sprayed by the glyphosate. So he got really up close and personal with glyphosate, and he developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in his early 40s. He had two young boys at home. I mean, it was just really a tragic situation. And he was in really bad shape with the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And the lawyers did a great job with the case. And it was really amazing that he won that, because, you know, you always think Monsanto is just going to throw so much money. They've got so many sophisticated lawyers. They're going to win. You know, they always manage to win, which is what's so frustrating with these cases. But this one was very clean and very strong and a really good lawyer. And I was just so thrilled. You can't imagine. It was a really big piece of good news for me. And it has had enormous impact. So after that, two other cases came up, and they also won large amounts. So there were huge amounts of money. They weren't necessarily getting that money, because Monsanto keeps on fighting, and they're still fussing with, you know, challenges to go through higher level courts and all this stuff. I mean, it's just so exhausting to go up against this company with something like a lawsuit. But nonetheless, that inspired hundreds, I think tens of thousands or even tens of thousands of people to come forward with their non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and say glyphosate caused this. So now there's huge numbers of lawsuits in the works, and Monsanto and Bayer, of course. Bayer, I think, was completely unprepared for what was going to happen. The Monsanto folks had assured them they had never lost a lawsuit, and they'd set aside a certain amount of money to deal with lawsuits, but it was way, way too little compared to what was needed. And I think the price of Bayer is now on the stock market is now lower than they lost more money than they paid to get Monsanto. I believe that's true, because their stock has been tanking as a consequence of all this worry about glyphosate, which makes me extremely happy. Mm. And so these other lawsuits are trying to do some kind of class action thing. There's talk of, I think it was it 10 $1 billion, I think, as a class action lawsuit, which is still way too little compared to the number of people and the damage that's being done. But it's very, very encouraging that that's happening, because it's making the whole world aware, hey, this chemical's not safe, you know. And Mexico, this is another really good piece of news. I'm so thrilled. Mexico decided they're going to phase glyphosate out by 2024. They're going to stop using it. And of course, America's all upset. And I really have to laugh at our government, because otherwise I would cry. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But we're pressuring Mexico, like, no, you can't do that. You know, we're going to lose money because we sell a lot of it to them, a lot of glyphosate to Mexico. And we're especially worried, and I love this, that we're going to be, Mexico is going to start refusing our food because our food is contaminated with glyphosate. And I really, really hope Mexico does that. Mm-hmm. We need to be pressured into changing our ways in this country if we want. If the rest of the world can pressure us into do it, I'll take it any way I can get it, you know. And another way that's encouraging is this actual stores that sell glyphosate. They're starting to get worried about lawsuits. And so some of the stores, some of the big stores that distribute glyphosate are deciding, well, maybe not. I don't think I better sell this product anymore, because if I get a liability on a lawsuit, that's going to cost me a lot of money and it's not worth the risk. So I just won't sell glyphosate. That's happening in some of the major distributors of glyphosate, which is another really good sign. And then, of course, there's all the population who are hearing how terrible it is and then switching to a certified organic diet. That's another big momentum. In our country, there's a growing, the growth in the sales of certified organic foods is going up exactly in step with the rise in glyphosate usage on core crops. It matches very well. And of course, that makes sense, because as more and more people become aware the food is toxic and the food becomes more and more toxic, more and more people are inspired to go organic. Yeah. And so that's a big message that I try to get across, switch to certified organic food, and that will pressure the farmers into growing. If people won't buy the food, they won't make it. Yeah. So I think all those different fronts will gradually get us to the point we need to be at. And one thing I really love is sort of the farm to table kind of concept, where you have the farm actually these days with the internet, and this would be something you could consider in South Africa. I think maybe you already have it. Mm. I mean, you probably do actually, you know, sort of an organic farm, an internet sort of phone based, you know, you just go order and you can pay through PayPal or something. And so there's like a really easy way to configure the setup so that a person actually orders. I think it's a great solution where the consumer orders the specific things they want, the tomatoes and cucumbers, and then they order for pickup on a certain time, and then they pay in advance, and then they just show up and take it away. That nobody even needs to be there. So that's great for COVID-19 too, right? Yeah. You don't even have to see a person, just go pick up the basket that they've prepared for you. And organic farm, that's really great because it cuts out all the middlemen. So a much better value for the farmer, and the guaranteed sale. When you put the tomatoes there, you know they've already bought. So the farmer doesn't have to go. You know, he has to have a stand and he sells, and some of it doesn't sell. He comes back. It's like a lot of work to do it. The farmer's market is really great too, but I think this is even better than the farmer's market when you have this arrangement with the farmer directly.
Right.
So I'm hoping that people will move.
Yeah, there is. You know, there are those services here in South Africa. They're not really very popular. They're still in their infancy, but I think they are growing. I think in Cape Town, they're far more sort of progressive when it comes to certified organic. Still very expensive in South Africa for people to afford it, but I think those costs are going to be coming down. I think C19, what's been good is people can order a lot more off the internet, so they become a lot more, you know, user-friendly with regards to ordering online. But we've got a long way to go in South Africa, being an African country. You know, there's a lot of like regulation that is not upheld. No one's enforcing these things, never mind, you know, sort of, you know, putting them in place from a legal point of view. So glyphosate is used extensively and Roundup extensively in South Africa, like you've already said. But why don't you let's take a step back and just explain what Roundup is and the active ingredient glyphosate for those people that don't know.
Right. Yeah. So Roundup is, of course, an herbicide. And as I said, the most used herbicide on the planet, who goes with the GMO crops. Most of the GMOs, actually majority, the largest percentage of the GMOs are plants that have been engineered to resist Roundup by inserting a bacterial gene into the plant genome. And those are corn and soy and sugar beets and alfalfa. And there's just a handful of these foods, but they're very, they're key components of the processed food industry. In the United States, we have huge fields of corn and soy, that become soy protein bars and corn chips and things like that. And of course, high fructose corn syrup comes from the corn. So we basically send these crops off to these plants where they get separated into, you know, what I would call pseudo foods, and then they get reassembled into junk food, you know. So a lot of the snacks that we are so easily available and that children like so much are really bad for them, not just because of the glyphosate, but also because all the nutrition has been sucked out of the food. You know, it's just, it doesn't have any of the fancy molecules that the plants would normally produce that help us to stay healthy. All the polyphenols and flavonoids and terpenoids, these are all wonderful complex molecules that plants produce that get completely disappear when you produce these processed foods. Even chlorophyll, for example, is really good for you. And then you don't get it when you eat these soy protein bars. So, I mean, soy protein bar to me is a good example of an absolutely terrible food, a huge list of ingredients, and many of them look like chemicals. It's just, you know, not really an edible product, and they're cheap and people think they're nutritious. And so, you know, so those things just should be completely avoided. I feel should be eliminated along with the glyphosate.
Okay, great. And what about other neurological conditions? You know, look at Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and even children with attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity. There seems to be such a huge upsurge in, you know, those conditions. You think glyphosate and GMO is related to those type of conditions as well?
I absolutely do. I think glyphosate, so Alzheimer's is going up in our country exactly in step with the rise in glyphosate usage, along with autism. ADHD is highly correlated. Even sleep disorder is highly correlated. We did a study on sleep disorder, found really strong correlation. Vitamin D deficiency has gone up through the roof, and that's also caused by glyphosate, because glyphosate disrupts the enzyme in the liver that activates vitamin D. It's very simple. And we have an epidemic. And of course, vitamin D deficiency gives you four times increased risk of having a bad outcome with COVID-19. So that's connected too. I think glyphosate is a key player in the reason why COVID-19 is hitting so hard on the Western countries. You look at the countries that are getting hit hard, United States, Brazil, much of Europe, UK. I mean, those are all heavy users of glyphosate. And I believe that glyphosate disrupts the innate immune system in a big way. So it weakens your immune system, which makes you unable to fight off the virus when you get exposed. And so the virus flourishes, and then you have to draw in the big guns. You have to draw in the adaptive immune system, develop the antibodies, and then you get this extreme, what they call cytokine storm. You know, these people who get this runaway cytokine storm destroys their lungs and starts destroying their blood vessels as well. They get into a thrombosis, you know, multiple blood clots, and just a complete cascade. And then so they start to get multiple organ failure. I mean, these kinds of catastrophic outcomes from COVID-19. I believe are due primarily to glyphosate, and there are other chemicals as well that are playing a role, but weakened immune system due to toxic exposures is what causes a person to be very susceptible. Otherwise, and of course the vitamin D deficiency plays into that as well, but otherwise I think COVID-19 would not be a problem if people were otherwise healthy, if they had a strong immune system. And so it really frustrates me that we don't notice that, but it's an incredible difference between, I've been looking at Africa in particular, because it's quite interesting. A place like Nigeria, which has a lot of poverty, a lot of crowding in the city, mainly Black population. In America, the Blacks are much more susceptible than the whites. I don't know if you've heard that, but they're getting hit much harder than the whites are. So Africa has all these, Nigeria has all these, and also really bad air pollution. Air pollution has also been connected to bad outcomes with COVID in the West, in the United States, and in Europe. But things going against it has an extremely low rate of death from COVID-19, extremely low. And I did the calculation, even when you, if you just assume that everybody over 65, only people over 65 are dying, because Nigeria has a low percentage of elderly people. And people say, oh, well, that's why, but that's not enough of why, because even when you correct for that, and you just look at the people over 65, the population over 65 in Nigeria versus the population over 65 in the United States, you still get a 1 in 100. For every one person who dies in Nigeria, 100 people die in the United States. Wow. So it's an extraordinary difference, despite all those risk factors that they have in Nigeria. And I don't think they're being particularly careful about social distancing and wearing masks either.
Yeah.
And yet here they are with only one for every 100 in our country. And what is going on there? And, you know, people are scrambling to try to, there's not much chatter about it, of course, which also puzzles me. The United States should be looking hard at this situation to figure out, why is Nigeria doing so well compared to us? That's a very good thing to ask. And Nigeria uses much, much less glyphosate than we do on their crops. And I think that's a major player. The air pollution actually doesn't correlate with COVID-19. It does correlate within the United States very, very well. When you have cities that have more nanoparticles, you know, they can measure the nanoparticles. Mm-hmm. And there was a study done out of Harvard that looked at the at the county level, they looked at the nanoparticle levels in the air on average versus the death rate from COVID-19. And they found a strong correlation. So they're saying, well, air pollution is playing a role. And you see that in New York City, you know, had that huge hit. And Lombardy in Italy, they were also a very, very air polluted city in Italy. But the air pollution, I believe, is only connected if glyphosate is also involved. This is something that I've written about, and it's really interesting because the biofuel industry is heating up, and the United States is a leader in the as well as Europe. They're both leaders in the biofuel industry. And the biofuels are derived from crops that are sprayed with glyphosate right before harvest. So you're getting a lot of glyphosate in the biofuels. And then that glyphosate is evaporating into the air before the fuel gets consumed. And so you're picking up glyphosate in the air, which is getting caught in those nanoparticles and then being taken up. The virus also, the nanoparticles trap the virus and trap the glyphosate. So you're breathing in both the glyphosate and the virus at the same time. And the glyphosate wrecks the immune system, and then the virus has a field day. I think that's what's going on with these places where they're in the, and of course the original Wuhan has that set up too, air pollution, glyphosate. And then the outbreak started there, and they got these really sick people because their air was just inviting disaster. And so I think that's really fascinating. And I really think that's something people need to look into as a potential explanation for why Nigeria has only 1 in 100, you know, the rate of death from compared to the US, even when you normalize for the elderly population.
Wow.
It's quite amazing.
It'd be interesting to having a look at that data in South Africa over the age of 65, because obviously we use a lot more glyphosate possibly than Nigeria, but we've got a very low death rate here in South Africa. And possibly it's just because outside getting adequate vitamin D levels, although
I know that's a good one. Yeah, because people are outside a lot more, I think, in Africa than they are here. Mm. And another possibility is quite fascinating, which is tuberculosis. It's really, really interesting. I've been looking into that. There was a paper that suggested that the tuberculosis vaccine might be protecting from COVID, because they found that countries that required the vaccine had lower rates on average than countries that didn't require the vaccine. Well, I didn't believe it was the vaccine that would be helping you. And so I looked into that, and I found another paper from Italy, Israel. Israel had a good chance to look, because they had had required the vaccine. I believe it was before 1987 or something like that. They required the vaccine, and then afterwards they didn't. So this vaccine gets required by countries that have a lot of problems with tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. doesn't have a lot of problems with tuberculosis, and we don't require the vaccine. And of course, we have sky high rates of COVID deaths. So the countries that require the vaccine can be divided into those that have high risk of the disease and those that don't. So among the ones who require the vaccine, if you separate them along that dimension, you find that only the ones that have a high rate of the disease actually get the protection. Israel did not get the protection. They looked very carefully at this 87 breakpoint, and the people who were born just before, born just after, looking at the COVID rates, and it was a wash. There was no difference. So they said, well, the vaccine's not helping us. That doesn't look like this vaccine is doing anything in the case of Israel. And that's because Israel doesn't have a high rate of tuberculosis. And of course, they're not looking at that. They're looking at the vaccine. They shouldn't be. They should be. In Africa, 80% of the people in Africa are infected with that virus. And most of them don't get sick. You know, you only get sick if you've got other issues like the toxic exposures to glyphosate. So the people who are infected, not virus, it's a bacterium. Sorry, I made a mistake there. Mycobacterium tuberculosis is the disease organism that's causing this tuberculosis that's being protected by that vaccine. So it's the disease, not the vaccine, that's protecting you. And it's not just the disease, but it's the bacterium itself. And this is really, really fascinating to me, because I have come to believe that viruses and bacteria are all trying to help you out. I mean, they're not trying to kill you. It's not like a war. We shouldn't think of it as a war between us and our infected exposures. We should think of it as a collaboration. And ironically, I think this the COVID-19 virus is actually trying to compensate. I actually think it's trying to compensate for the problems that glyphosate is causing. And I've written about that, and it's really, really fascinating science. But it looks to me like the virus launches a cascade effect in the lungs, which causes the water to come in. You feel like you're drowning, you know, you can't get enough oxygen, really, really bad symptoms. But that that water is really important for allowing the macrophages are brought in there and the platelets come in. And basically it, what happens is that the macrophages restore the health of their mitochondria through that process. So the virus is setting up a situation which is a drastic attempt to try to repair the innate immune system so that it can work again and by fixing its mitochondria. And once the mitochondria are fixed, then the macrophages can clear, the immune cells can clear the virus. But if the things are so bad because of all the glyphosate exposures that you can't fix the macrophages enough to clear the virus, then you die. So it's sort of a race against time as to whether you can fix the macrophages before the drowning of the lungs kills you. It's kind of a race against time. And some people are just so sick from the chemicals that they can't get through it without dying. That's what I think is going on. It's really, really fascinating. But the bacterium infects 80% of the population of Africa, and only a small, I don't know what the percentage is. I mean, tuberculosis is a serious problem in Africa, but it's not a huge percentage of the population. It's, I don't know what the number is, but it's small. And so most of the people are fine, but they've got that bacterium that's helping them out. And that bacterium infects the lungs, and it actually provides for the host something called menaquinone sulfate, which is a really, really useful antioxidant as well as a supplier of sulfate. And I've identified both oxidative damage, you know, insufficient antioxidant capacity and insufficient sulfate as critical drivers behind the weakened immune system. And those are also what glyphosate causes. And so I have a new book that is going to be published in June of this year called Toxic Legacy. And it's all about glyphosate. There's a subtitle that goes like how the, or why the herbicide, the weed killer glyphosate is, how the weed killer glyphosate is destroying our health and the environment. That's the subtitle. Sure. And in that book, I have a whole chapter on the immune system, and I show how glyphosate can be predicted to mess up the innate immune system. And of course, I talk a lot about the mitochondria. Glyphosate, it's been shown in many studies that glyphosate causes oxidative stress, it depletes glutathione, it does all these things that are going to, first of all, harm the liver. I mean, the liver gets hit really hard by glyphosate, and it messes up enzymes that are needed to detoxify other toxic chemicals. So everything becomes synergistic. When you get exposed to glyphosate and, you know, and it can be glyphosate and some kind of insecticide, or glyphosate in some kind of plastic thing, or some kind of mold. I mean, all these different things that produce toxic chemicals that are normally detoxed by the liver, that detoxification system gets broken by glyphosate. And so everything else becomes much more toxic than it would otherwise be in the presence of chronic glyphosate exposure.
Wow.
So it harms so the blood, it harms the liver. It's just, and then once the liver is broken, then all kinds of bad things happen.
My goodness. I mean, not understanding that there's such a vitamin D deficiency still in South Africa, although people spend a lot of time outside, and that could be because of glyphosate, because that prevents vitamin D. You know, so that's incredible. Do you think possibly the microbiome, because people, you know, are very rural? I mean, obviously, you know about South Africa, their micro sort of diversity might be really, really good. They live in close contact as communities, and possibly, you know, not being so, you know, clean and hygienic, that status could have really helped them from a diversity point of view.
I definitely think so. I think it's really good. In fact, decrease in microbiome diversity is a key driver to show disease in the gut. You know, they see that kids with autism, for example, have less diversity in their gut. Mm-hmm. And I think that lack of diversity is partly due to the lack of exposure too, because we're so clean. We're staying inside all the time. We're using all these antibacterial soaps and things like that. I think it's a stupid thing to do. People should welcome these microbes. That's what I'm saying. They're good for us. Yeah. And, you know, we think they're all bad, but they're not. Most of them are good. And in fact, even the bad ones are not necessarily bad. They're trying to help you out, but it's just that you're so poisoned that their response, their idea of how to fix you, it doesn't work because you've got too much poison is basically, I think, why people end up dying with exposures to these infective agents. They clearly do something. But what they do is they try to keep you healthy. And that's where the mycobacterium comes in, because it's really fascinating to me. If that is infecting your lungs, you're being supplied automatically with this really wonderful menaquinone sulfate, which is in fact uniquely produced by that organism. I don't know of any other organism that produces that. It's a combination of the sulfate and the menaquinone. Menaquinone is a vitamin K2. And I think vitamin K2 deficiency has also been linked to COVID. You know, these various vitamin deficiencies are linked to COVID, vitamin C, vitamin K2, B vitamins, vitamin D, all of them. So people are deficient in these essential nutrients, in part because their gut is so wrecked that these things can't be absorbed, you know, and so we're just really in bad shape because of the toxic exposures. We don't realize the degree to which the toxic exposures are messing everything up compared to just the simple lack of nutrients. You know, you could be eating plenty of cobalamin, but it's not going in because your gut is so broken that it can't be absorbed. And that's what's happening to people.
I think obviously microbiome is, you know, a huge sort of area of growth and studying and papers that are coming out and how important your gut is. But just let me know, is certified organic, that's probably the most important thing from what I understand from all your work, to try and do that and eat organic where you can and best. But if you cannot afford it, you know, what should you do with these? You know, you're talking about corn, you're talking about soybean, you're talking about beans, you're talking about even sugar. I mean, sugar, we think, is it the sugar that's causing it, or is it the glyphosate, or is it a combination of the two? I mean, it just sounds like glyphosate is destroying, you know, the, you know, every single part of our detox mechanisms, from liver to kidneys to our gut. You know, how, what can people do if they cannot afford organic food?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, one thing to do is to find out which foods are most contaminated and avoid those. And I do think wheat, for example, and oats, and the the legumes I mentioned before, certainly in Canada, at least. So Canada has all those numbers. I mean, the United States hasn't been testing, so we don't really know. In our country, they don't care. They don't know. I mean, that's pretty ironic. A country that has that much wealth doesn't bother to test how much of the most used herbicide by far, how much of it is in our food. They don't bother to test it. I just find that outrageous. Our country, our government is just doing terribly with respect to trying to fix this problem, you know. But if you can know which foods are likely not to be contaminated with glyphosate and then tend to eat those. And of course, with fruits, I mean, fruits are often contaminated with insecticides. But I think that there's a benefit in washing, you know, washing the fruits very carefully before you eat them, because the insecticide can be washed off. Glyphosate cannot be washed off. It is embedded in the tissue of the protein of the fruit, you know, or whatever food is exposed to it. The glyphosate is stuck inside it. You can't wash it off. In fact, I haven't mentioned this yet, but my book is mostly about glyphosate acting as an analog of the amino acid glycine. And glycine is the is one of the building blocks of proteins. The amino acids are the, they're assembled like beads on a string to make proteins. And there's about 20 of them. And glycine is the smallest one, the smallest of the amino acids. And it plays a really important role in many proteins because of its small size. It makes things very flexible. It leaves room for substrate to fit. And so there are many proteins that have extremely important glycine residues in them. And I believe glyphosate is a glycine molecule. It's a complete glycine molecule, except that it has extra material stuck onto its nitrogen atom. And so I believe glyphosate is getting mistaken for glycine in the assembly process and is being inserted into the protein in place of glycine. And if that's happening, you can see how that explains all those diseases that are going up dramatically, the diabetes, the obesity, the autism, the Alzheimer's, the gut problems, the liver problems. Everything can be explained through specific proteins that can be predicted to be affected by glyphosate. So that's my book.
And it's I heard that with you and Dr. McCullough and then Dr. Dietrich Klinghart to take glycine. And so I take glycine, you know. So
that's right. I'm glad you brought that up, because they're both finding that glycine is a really good supplement to take. And it tastes sweet. It's like sugar, and it's not very expensive. So it could be that that would be a good strategy. And I should say there's some other things as well that you can do. There's fulvic acid and humic acid, which is complex organic molecules in the soil. And people sell those on the web, and you can take those. Apparently they're very good binding molecules that will trap toxic chemicals in the fulvic acid and then remove them through the feces. So that's something that people have found to be effective. There were some cows that were studied, I think, by a group in Germany. The cows were sick. They tested high glyphosate in their urine. they gave them fulvic acid, humic acid, sauerkraut juice, which is really interesting. Sauerkraut juice seemed to be beneficial. And then they showed that their health improved and their urinary levels of glyphosate dropped with that treatment. So that's quite interesting because those are pretty innocent things to take. Yeah. And sauerkraut juice contains Acetobacter. I have a hypothesis that it could be that it's providing a microbe that can break down glyphosate because some species of Acetobacter know how to break it down. So looking for, I think the microbes that are able to fully metabolize glyphosate have a huge edge over the ones that can't. Mm. And yeah. So they can become problematic in the gut too, because there's some like Pseudomonas rugosa, which can break down glyphosate, but it's become a huge problem in the hospitals as an infection that can end up killing people because it's insensitive to all the antibiotics. Glyphosate has also been shown to cause, to improve the pathogen's ability to fight off the antibiotics. So it's causing, glyphosate is a causal factor in the epidemic we're seeing in antibiotic resistant, like MRSA, you know, a multiple resistant Staph aureus, that's another one, Staph aureus that can break down glyphosate. So I think the pathogens that can break down glyphosate end up surviving in the gut and doing a service for the host by removing the glyphosate, but then they cause disease. So yeah. You don't get something for nothing, you know?
Sure. All right, so let's go back to our list. Number one, eat organic, you know, as best as you can, especially the vegetables, especially the food sources that you've mentioned, you know, the wheat, the oats, the soybeans, the beans, the falafel, those type of things, the sugar, try and obviously eat organic wherever you can. Number one. Number two, your humic and your fulvic acid. Looking at possibly apple cider vinegar. I think I read something about that.
I eat that every day. Yeah, apple cider vinegar is similar to sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. And I eat sauerkraut too. Now I've been buying organic sauerkraut. So it's a developed sauerkraut taste, but okay. Any kind of fermented foods actually I suspect would be helpful, even milk, ferment, you know, cheese and cottage cheese and sour cream, those kinds of things. Mm. I expect would also be helpful, although I don't know, no one's done the research. Mm. But just because it's also fermented, I think fermented foods in general are good for other reasons as well, so I would encourage consuming fermented foods and also getting outdoors in the sunlight. I'm a big fan of the sunlight. I think that is such a gift. You know, sunlight has been giving energy to the earth for so long. Biology has learned how to use sunlight in very sophisticated ways. Mm. We know the plants die if they don't get sunlight, and they have chlorophyll, and they know how to turn it turn our inorganic matter into organic matter using sunlight as a source of energy. Mm. Animals also know how to use sunlight very, very effectively. And I believe that it is really important to get adequate sunlight exposure. No sunscreen, no sunglasses, get out there in the sun. I advocate that, and that'll boost your vitamin D.
Great. What about something that I'm a big fan of, infrared sauna, in terms of, you know, reading Dr. Pizzorno's book and, you know, how important it is. Have people measured, number one, how can they measure their glyphosate levels if they do a urine test? And number two, if they get into an infrared sauna or sauna, they sweat in the sun, you know, because sweating in the sun or putting a jacket on and trying to sweat is pretty free. So have they measured, you know, glyphosate levels decreasing after infrared sauna or any detox sort of process?
They may have. I'm not aware of anything like that. And certainly it should be done. I think that's an excellent suggestion. So sweating, I suspect, is a good way to get rid of glyphosate because it's water soluble. You probably spread it out into your skin. And the sauna also is infrared is really amazing. This is something Gerald Pollack talks about. And I've been really into this whole area of gelled water, as you probably know, and the role of gelled water in the body and the role of sulfate in maintaining the gelled water. Gerald Pollack showed experimentally that that sunlight, or infrared in particular, expands what's called the exclusion zone water by a factor of four. So a huge expansion in response to the energy that's being provided specifically by infrared. And infrared feels so good, doesn't it? I mean, I really love to get really close to the fire, you know, in the winter and feel that infrared. It's just a wonderful kind of heat that is very pleasing.
Great. And what about, you know, I had Dr. Tom Cowan on the show, and, you know, he has the vegetable gardens and that. In terms of people growing their own vegetables or aquaponics or hydroponics, can you sort of give us your, you know, your expert opinion? Should people be trying to, you know, grow their own vegetables as best as they can and not using things like glyphosate? Or is that not even used because there's glyphosate in the air, so it's not going to make a big difference?
I know. Well, that is a problem. If your neighbors are using glyphosate on their lawn, it could seep over to your vegetables. But I think it would be great for people to gain more control over their food by growing their own. If they have a place to do it, they really should. And you can even put it like in a container, right? You don't necessarily have to have soil. Like if you live in the city, you could even, if you have a deck or something, you could put a container and grow some tomatoes in there or something like that. I would encourage people to try to do that as much as they could. And of course, not use any chemicals on those crops. You don't avoid glyphosate 100% if you live in a place like the United States. Our organic food, typically, much of our organic food is contaminated with glyphosate, unfortunately, but it's much, much smaller levels. The rain, there was a study on the rain. They found, I think it was 76% of the rain samples had glyphosate contamination in them. So many parts of our country are just, you can't avoid it. You know, you just can't avoid it. And of course, if you're an organic farm and next door is a non-organic farm and they're spraying glyphosate from the airplane, the wind blows. I mean, you can't just put a block at the boundary and say, don't come here. So, you know, we need to get it banned worldwide. I just feel, you know, really frustrated that we can't protect ourselves in today's world, especially if you live in a country like the United States.
Okay.
And we're paying a price. We're paying a price with COVID, I think.
Mm. And what about testing? If someone's listening to this or they're watching a YouTube video, how can they get tested in what their levels of glyphosate are if they're concerned about that as a toxin?
Yeah, there are sites on the web that will offer glyphosate testing. And I should know the name and I'm forgetting right now, but you can find, I forgot the name, but there's organizations that offer glyphosate testing. I think it costs something like $100, so it's not cheap. And you can do it by, they send you a kid and then you, you know, you provide a urine sample and you can do it through the mail. So you don't have to go somewhere to do it. But of course the test is very short lived. I mean, it's basically testing your exposure over the past 2 weeks with the urine, because it kind of passes through. Most of it passes through, but there's a small percentage of it that accumulates in your proteins throughout your body. And that is very, very hard to get rid of. So as you get older, you get more and more of these contaminated proteins with glyphosate causing mischief. And then they can get broken down and recycled into new proteins as well. So you get a continual mess going on in your body with various proteins getting disrupted by glyphosate. And I think that's what's causing the Alzheimer's, is the misfolding of amyloid beta because of some glycines in that molecule that are really important for it to fold correctly. And it's been shown experimentally that when you change those glycines to something else, the protein becomes this amyloid beta plaque. And then there's also collagen. Collagen has huge amounts of glycine. It has a long sequence of GXY, 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 where every third amino acid is a glycine, very regular pattern. It creates this crystal structure, this triple helix structure that gives collagen very special properties in terms of tensile strength and elasticity and the ability to hold water. And all those properties get messed up when you start throwing glyphosate in place of glycines randomly in that sequence. So we have a lot of problems in this country with joint pain and bone pain and hip replacement therapy and foot problems. We just have all kinds of problems. Prolapsed uterus, you know, women are having issues with their muscles not being able to hold up their body parts, and they slide down and cause trouble. Really serious problems that we're seeing with just collagen getting messed up, I think, by glyphosate.
I've also seen a lot of joint hypermobility syndrome increase dramatically over my career.
Right, you're right.
You know, EDS, you know, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and those type of things. And it's probably got to do with, you know, glycine and possibly sulfur. And maybe you can just comment on sulfur and products like, you know, glucosamine sulfate and methyl sulfonyl methane, how important sulfur is with regards, and glycine with regards to glyphosate.
Right. I mean, of course, it's a complicated story to explain how glyphosate messes up sulfur, but it has a lot to do with the enzymes that are involved in oxidizing, for example, just oxidizing sulfite to sulfate. You make it something called PEPS with an enzyme that also has critical glycine. So all these enzymes that are involved in going through the sulfur cycle. Even the methionine. Methionine is the organic sulfur, really. It's the base of the organic sulfur system. And it's been shown that glyphosate disrupts enzymes that make organic sulfur from inorganic sulfur. So what happens, for example, in the gut, you get hydrogen sulfide gas building up because you can't get that sulfur into an organic molecule like methionine. So you get methionine deficiency, which leads to cysteine deficiency, which leads to glutathione deficiency, because all of those depend on that sulfur. glutathione deficiency is a big deal because glutathione is really, really important as an antioxidant in the liver. And so on top of that, you get hydrogen sulfide gas building up in the gut. That's something you see with the autistic kids. They get these microbes that overgrow that can convert sulfide into hydrogen sulfide gas. And that gas is a very small, very mobile. It can just go through your tissues like a ghost. It can rise up into your brain and cause brain fog because it's supposed to be captured as organic sulfur, but it doesn't. It doesn't get captured. And then it just spreads through your body and causes a lot of problems. And so it's a mess with sulfur. And then so the collagen actually binds to these glycosaminoglycans. These are these sulfated GAGs, glycosaminoglycan, a huge long word. But those guys are all over your fascia. You know, the whole what holds your body together is this collagen matrix with sulfated molecules. They're sort of sulfated modified sugars in very complex molecules. Those guys are really, really important, and they're getting messed up, and especially because there's not enough sulfate. So they become deficient in sulfate. And then that causes, again, more problems with your joints because there's not enough sulfate to keep the water gelled and to hold the water even, you know, so your joints become bone on bone because there's just not enough water there to cushion the joints. I mean, just lots and lots of things go south.
Let's talk about vaccines, Dr. Sanef, because I think that's important, you know, the general vaccine and now this COVID-19 vaccine, very experimental, I think too soon for my liking, but, you know, there's no yes, maybe, or no for certain people. What do you think about the C19 vaccine?
I'm terrified, actually, of the messenger RNA vaccines, and I'm astonished at the willingness in this country for people to line up, people to actually wait for hours for the opportunity to get this vaccine. It just blows my mind. I don't want to go near it. I've read a lot. In fact, I've put together a paper. We've submitted a paper describing all the things that it could potentially do to cause harm. And I'm really, really worried that it's going to cause an epidemic and lots of problems in the future. It's going to happen slowly, unfortunately, a lot of it. So there are people who are reporting amazing stories of young people dying within a day of getting the vaccine, that sort of thing. We're seeing chatter on the social media about these problems. The government is absolutely determined to censor any information that might reveal the danger of these vaccines. The government is really, really wants us to just embrace it and shut up and get your vaccine. And in fact, to be encouraged that you should do that for the nation. You need to protect the nation from this virus. Get your vaccine. There's tremendous pressure. And most people are succumbing to that pressure and just saying, fine, I'll just get the vaccine. But it can cause, it's hard to summarize everything, but the messenger RNA itself has been manipulated. It's a messenger RNA, you know, packaged inside this thing with these lipids around it. It makes it look like a natural, what's called an exosome. So it kind of fakes the biology of our biology to thinking that it's an exosome. And then our cells take it up and then the RNA is released. And then it's all set to go to code for the protein, to make the spike protein. The spike protein is the protein that the virus uses both to bind to the ACE2 receptors and to get inside the cell. It has both of those skills. And so your own cells start making this spike protein, and then they display it on their surface. And then the immune cells come in and say, oh gosh, this strange protein, and they build the antibodies. So the whole point is to get you to develop antibodies to the spike protein. But they've designed this this RNA to be very abnormal. They really mucked with it, and they add this big poly A tail on it. They do all these things too. They change one of the nucleotides to be a different one, something pseudo-methyl version of itself. So they're really, they modify the RNA in order to make it stick around, because they know the RNA normally would be removed very quickly by the body. They don't want that to happen because then it won't be able to make the protein. So they means the RNA sticks around. It's hard for the cell to remove it. And when that happens, there's an opportunity for enzymes that reverse RNA to DNA to take hold. And so, in fact, the sperm in particular can take the RNA, convert it to DNA, and package up these little pellets of DNA that the sperm actually release during fertilization. So the sperm release all these little pellets that get taken up by the fertilized egg. And so the embryo becomes infected with a DNA version of the RNA that makes the spike protein. And God knows what that's going to what that's going to cause. I can picture that that child is going to be born able to make spike protein and able to think that spike protein is a natural human protein. So that child won't even react if it gets infected with COVID-19. It won't even react. It won't even launch an immune response to it, which means that child can be a carrier for a long, long time because it won't be able to remove the virus. And people will then get infected from that child. I would predict that. But there's also all kinds of autoimmune predictions because that virus protein contains lots of sequences that are similar to sequences in known human proteins that cause autoimmune disease. All kinds of autoimmune diseases like type 1 diabetes and multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, all these different celiac disease, all these different autoimmune diseases, there are components of that spike protein that resemble the proteins to which the autoimmune disease antibodies attack. So what happens is that through something called molecular mimicry, the antibodies that have been produced in response to the spike protein then start attacking the human proteins and causing all these diseases. So I expect an uptick in autoimmune disease. And I expect some kind of strange thing happening with some people getting a DNA version, even not just in the sperm, but also in the immune cells, getting a DNA version of this RNA that will then be a permanent part of their organism, that they'll be able to keep on making spike protein. And spike protein itself is also very toxic. It's been shown that it can cause toxicity in the brain, and it can cause toxicity in the heart. So you can get heart disease, various brain disorders. So I think there's tremendous possibility for mischief with that vaccine. I am not going to go near it myself. I just will not get it.
Now, Dr. Sanef, where can the sort of audience, I mean, there's a lot said there, it's very complicated science. You're a scientist, you're an MIT scientist, you're a PhD, you know, very well versed in this, but what does the common person do? Where do they go? Where do they find out about vaccines when they almost enforced or pressurized by family or, you know, employers? Where can they go to learn more about this? And are there other doctors like yourself and medical doctors and specialists and immunologists? You know, I was listening to a podcast on the Western Plus podcast of someone, an immunologist, who said these are really experimental, you know, vaccines. This is not that someone should be taking it now. In fact, it's more gene therapy than a vaccine itself. But where can people go? I mean, people might be confused out there. They might have, you know, multiple comorbid conditions, and they're saying to themselves, I'd rather take the risk of the vaccine, you know, rather than actually die a death from COVID because I'm obese and I've got, you know, metabolic syndrome. Where can people go? What can they do?
Right. I mean, it's hard because there's tremendous censorship going on. I like Dr. Mercola a lot, and he has been amazing, actually, in the last couple of months. He's just been producing one article after another, really laying out the story the way it is and trying to get the truth out to the population. But he's incredibly suppressed on the web. When you search for his articles, you'll find other his article reproduced on somebody else's page, and you won't find it on his page. He's just been enormously suppressed. Which is really tragic because his work is really right on. He's really got the message right. And I think, you know, it's a much bigger problem than just this vaccine or this glyphosate. You know, there's a whole medical mafia thing going on that he really hits hard on. He's, of course, got lots and lots of enemies in the mainstream medical community. And they don't want us to know that the whole system is broken. And we need to really start over from the ground up. I think we need a revolution in medicine and in food. You know, we really need, and I'm encouraged that people are doing that. I mean, there's a lot of excitement right now in regenerative agriculture, you know, and you mentioned hydroponics. I mean, that may work. That's really challenging to grow food without soil. I would worry about that, but I think that could turn out to be good because you certainly can keep away the bugs that way. Mm. You grow it internally in a closed area. So, I mean, there's research going on to try to figure out how to grow food without using these chemicals. We absolutely need to get back to that. We need to get rid of all the pesticides and all the fungicides as well. We need to grow our food organically. We're finding that these things are destroying the soil to the point where the plant has trouble growing. So with glyphosate, you know, you start off, when you first start using glyphosate, you increase your yield, but then over time, your soil gets ruined. And then your yield starts to go down, and then eventually they don't become competitive anymore. And of course the weeds develop resistance. The whole GMO, you know, based agricultural system, I think is on its last legs. I hope so. It's collapsing. And it's nice that Africa actually was so slow to adopt it, because Africa is positioned to do a lot better than the other parts of the world. and getting back to the kind of way of growing food that they already almost still practice, you know. Not so much South Africa, but other parts of Africa are doing quite well. So, yeah, it's going to be a long haul, but I think we just need to all of us get on board with the idea that we cannot use toxic chemicals on our food. We have to find a different way. And if we put our brains to the task of doing this, we can find a way. We can do it. And we should be able to produce food organically and cheaply, I think, if we just figure that out.
Great. And we're coming to the end of the show. I'm so grateful for all your knowledge, and I'd love to have you on and talk about your book, Toxic Legacy. And I think it's I'm starting to think more that it's the glyphosate rather than the sugar, you know, it's the glyphosate.
Absolutely.
And the wheat, you know, if you can eat wheat somewhere or oats, what doesn't have glyphosate in, probably that's going to have far less impact on your insulin, on, you know, you developing type 2 diabetes or something like that. But it's this toxin that is embedded in us that's causing probably a lot of damage in all our systems. But I do want to say, you know, as a professional biohacker, if people can do just three things, you know, they're hearing this now, you know, in terms of toxic overload, and we haven't really got into other toxins as well that are just so pervasive now in society now. But if people can just do three things, they're hearing this, they're listening, saying, what can I do? What are the three top things that they can do?
Well, certainly eating certified organic, trying to avoid food that's not certified organic, eating whole foods, getting out in the sunlight, getting the vitamin D in the sunlight. I guess maybe those are my top three.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sanef. It's been a pleasure to have you on the Made to Thrive show. You're a wealth of information. I want to get the book. I think, will the book be available in South Africa? Would it be able to be, you know, be sent here? Are you going to be putting it on Amazon, or how are you going to be distributing?
It will be available on Amazon. Yeah, all the major booksellers, I think, will have it.
Okay.
If you can order books on Amazon, you'll be able to get it. Yeah. In fact, you can pre-order it right now. There's a link for a pre-order.
Brilliant. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yes, great. I'll send that to you.
Put that in the show notes, and then we can get pre-order. So that'll link to Amazon, and you can pre-order the book, Toxic Legacy?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Fantastic. And I'll check that out to make sure that they can deliver. You know, someone like Joe McCullough's book on EMF didn't ship to South Africa for some reason. But I think this book, something Toxic Legacy, you know, we really want to give it to you. And I know that you have a son here and you've got grandchildren here. So hopefully we can get the word out to the South African
Society. That would be fantastic.
Medicine. You know, I'm really well connected with, medical and integrated medical doctors and functional medicine doctors here to get the word out as best as we can. So thank you so much for your time. I wish you well. I pray protection over you and people like Dr. McCullough, because you're standing out as pioneers. And I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Made to Thrive show. New episodes are released weekly and are published exclusively on the Made to Thrive podcast link. If you're interested in receiving more thriving insights, as well as receiving other exclusive member benefits, visit madetothrive.co.za/subscribe. This podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of healthcare professionals for any such conditions.